Have you ever wondered why you suddenly craved a bacon breakfast after seeing a doctor recommend it on TV? Or why you felt compelled to purchase a piano after visiting a friend's elegant music room? These aren't coincidental desires. They're the calculated results of propaganda, a concept masterfully explored in Edward Bernays' groundbreaking 1928 work. As Sigmund Freud's nephew and the father of modern public relations, Bernays wasn't just theorizing. He was revealing trade secrets from a career spent manipulating public opinion for governments and corporations. While today's readers might recognize his techniques in everything from Instagram influencer marketing to political campaigns, what makes this book particularly chilling is its candid admission of what many suspected but couldn't prove: that an invisible government of elites consciously shapes our thoughts, desires, and behaviors. No wonder Bernays' methods influenced everyone, from Joseph Goebbels to Madison Avenue advertisers, making this slim volume one of the most quietly influential texts of the 20th century. Before World War I, propaganda was a neutral term, originally referring to the Catholic Church's missionary efforts. The word carried no inherent suggestion of deception or manipulation. However, the Great War transformed both the meaning and application of propaganda forever. In 1915, governments systematically deployed modern media techniques to generate war enthusiasm, with Anglo-American campaigns effectively demonizing the Hun and framing the conflict as a battle between civilization and barbarism. This wartime propaganda proved so effective that it permanently altered how governments and businesses approached public opinion. Once peace arrived, propaganda professionals who had honed their skills in service of war efforts quickly found new clients in corporate America. Companies like General Motors and General Electric eagerly employed these experts to apply their persuasive techniques to commercial purposes. The period between the Versailles Treaty and the 1929 crash saw propaganda professionals aggressively marketing their services through books, essays, and speeches that extolled advertising's seemingly miraculous effects. They made grandiose claims that their science would not merely enrich corporations, but advance civilization itself. These practitioners presented consumption as a form of education, suggesting they could teach immigrants and working-class Americans proper citizenship through carefully guided purchasing habits. Despite these quasi-religious pitches found in works like Ernest Elmo Calkins's Business the Civilizer, propaganda had paradoxically become a dirty word. This transformation occurred largely because wartime propagandists had successfully associated the term exclusively with enemy deception. The public had grown increasingly skeptical as post-war revelations exposed how Allied governments had systematically deceived their own citizens during the conflict. Into this environment stepped Edward Bernays with his 1928 book, Propaganda, which attempted to rehabilitate the term through meticulous descriptions of ingenious propaganda campaigns. Rather than adopting the utopian tone of his contemporaries, Bernays took a coolly managerial approach, envisioning a smoothly functioning society guided by a benign elite of rational manipulators. His methodology transcended direct salesmanship, instead focusing on transforming consumers' entire worldview, like selling pianos by first cultivating public acceptance of the idea of a music room in the home, so that the eventual purchase would come to him as his own idea. Bernays positioned himself as part of an elevated supervisory network of invisible governors who organize chaos and pull the wires which control the public mind. While his book ostensibly aimed to rehabilitate propaganda's reputation, it primarily served as a sophisticated sales pitch aimed at potential corporate clients who might employ his services. Bernays opens with a provocative claim: democratic society requires the conscious manipulation of public opinion by an invisible government. This elite group, those who understand mass psychology, guides our choices in politics, business, and social life. While this system may seem undemocratic, Bernays argues it's necessary for society to function without descending into chaos. In theory, citizens make independent decisions in a democracy. Practically speaking, however, we need these invisible governors to filter information and narrow our choices to manageable options. Whether in politics, where parties simplify electoral choices, or commerce, where advertising prevents endless comparison shopping, propaganda organizes our complex society. Modern communication technologies, print, telephone, radio, allow ideas to spread instantaneously across America, creating new forms of social organization beyond geographical limitations. Society has become divided into countless specialized groups with their own publications, conventions, and interests. This intricate network of associations is how democracy has simplified its mass thinking. The invisible rulers extend beyond politics. Fashion leaders like Irene Castle establish trends that millions follow. A London tailor might influence what men wear in Topeka through a chain that includes American manufacturers and advertisers. Similarly, a silk manufacturer might persuade shoe companies to use matching silk on women's shoes, creating a new trend when promoted by a popular actress. Different invisible rulers control various aspects of our lives, politics, finance, fashion, working through different group leaders depending on the purpose. This concentration of influence happens because manipulating public opinion is expensive, leading to the emergence of propaganda specialists. Bernays introduces the Public Relations Council as a new professional who interprets enterprises to the public and vice versa. This role developed due to modern life's complexity and organized power's dependence on public opinion. The council analyzes clients' problems, their publics, and formulates policies to gain public approval, using all available communication channels. Unlike advertisers, they focus on broader relationship building. Rather than deplore this mechanism, Bernays argues we must understand how it works and develop ethical standards for its use. He suggests that effective counsel must maintain honesty and transparency, as their usefulness depends on credibility. Yet this ethical stance contradicts his own practices, as he later describes manipulative techniques that deliberately obscure the true motivations behind campaigns. Scientific studies of mass psychology have revealed the potential for invisible government through manipulation of group motives. Drawing from the work of Trotter, Laban, Graham Wallace, and Walter Lippmann, Bernays explains that groups possess distinct mental characteristics from individuals and are driven by different impulses and emotions. These scholars demonstrated how crowd psychology operates on principles distinct from individual decision-making, with groups showing heightened suggestibility, impulsiveness, and emotional reactivity. While propaganda is not an exact laboratory science, it has evolved beyond purely empirical approaches through the application of mass psychology principles. The modern propagandist studies systematically and objectively, investigating specific contexts like consumer preferences, voting patterns, social trends, and market dynamics. Research methods include surveys, focus groups, psychological testing, and behavioral analysis. Though scientific accuracy is limited by uncontrollable variables such as cultural shifts and economic conditions, propaganda practitioners can influence public opinion with reasonable predictability by understanding these underlying patterns. People are subject to mass psychology even when physically alone, as their minds retain group-influenced patterns. Individuals' decisions, from stock purchases to fashion choices to political affiliations, are unconsciously influenced by external factors rather than independent judgment. The group mind thinks through impulses, habits, and emotions, typically following trusted leaders or responding to clichés that represent entire concepts. For instance, people often buy products because celebrities endorse them, or adopt viewpoints because respected figures promote them, rather than through careful individual analysis. People rarely understand their true motivations, often providing rational explanations for emotionally driven decisions. Drawing from Freudian psychology, Bernays was, after all, Sigmund Freud's nephew, he notes that desires are frequently compensatory substitutes for suppressed wants. A person might claim to buy a luxury car for its reliability when the true motivation is status and social recognition. The successful propagandist must understand these hidden motives rather than accepting surface-level explanations. The new approach to propaganda contrasts with older mechanistic methods that relied on repetition and direct appeals. Modern propaganda works by removing resistance and creating circumstances that generate demand. For example, rather than directly advertising pianos, a propagandist might organize influential exhibitions to promote music rooms in homes, thereby stimulating piano sales indirectly. Similarly, selling cigarettes to women was achieved not through direct advertising, but by linking smoking to female empowerment and independence. Through associative processes and leveraging group dynamics, propagandists can make consumers feel they've independently arrived at decisions that were actually orchestrated. This psychological approach reveals why Bernays' techniques were so effective and disturbing. He didn't just sell products, he created entire frameworks of thinking that made those products seem necessary and desirable. By understanding the unconscious desires and group psychology of the public, he could manipulate behavior while making people believe they were acting autonomously. His methods transformed advertising from simple product promotion to sophisticated psychological manipulation, creating artificial needs and desires that continue to influence consumer culture today. The implications of his work extend far beyond commercial advertising into political campaigns, public relations, and social movements, demonstrating the power of psychological manipulation in shaping public opinion and behavior. The relationship between business and the public has fundamentally changed. No longer can businesses operate independently. They must take the public into partnership. This shift resulted from economic factors and growing public understanding of business operations. Modern businesses must sell not just products, but their entire corporate identity. 20 years before Bernays wrote, businesses attempted to operate regardless of public opinion, leading to the muckraking period where journalists exposed corporate abuses. By the late 1920s, business consciousness of public conscience had created healthier cooperation. Mass production had also transformed the relationship. Supply must actively create demand through advertising and propaganda to maintain profitable production rhythms. Improvements in advertising techniques and media reach placed businesses in personal relationships with vast publics. Competition between firms and between entire industries for the consumer's dollar had businesses seeking to inject themselves into the lives and customs of millions. Even financially, businesses depended on public opinion for investment capital and stock valuations. Modern businesses must express their entire corporate existence in ways the public understands, from labor policies to architectural choices, from employee behavior to executive reputations. The public relations specialist helps businesses interpret their purposes to the public and recommend modifications to meet public demands. These modifications might range from transforming product lines to adjusting employee dress codes or store aesthetics. Business must approach public relations with authenticity rather than protective coloring. The work typically involves either continuous interpretation, controlling every approach to the public mind, or dramatization through high-spotting, seizing attention with vivid details. As businesses grow larger through mergers, their public relationships multiply and intensify across stockholders, dealers, retailers, consumers, and the general public. The indirect approach often proves most effective in public relations, as when luggage manufacturers addressed railroad handling practices rather than targeting consumers directly. Successful campaigns frequently align business interests with broader social purposes, creating a common denominator between product sales and public good. This corporate propaganda revolution represented a fundamental shift in how capitalism functioned. No longer could businesses simply produce goods and expect them to sell. They had to manufacture demand through sophisticated psychological techniques. The modern consumer economy was being born, with propaganda as its midwife. Democracy's great political problem is how to induce our leaders to lead when they're conditioned to follow. The voice of the people isn't divine wisdom, but rather the product of inherited prejudices and ideas supplied by group leaders. Gifted politicians can use propaganda to shape public will while serving it. As Disraeli cynically noted, "I must follow the people. Am I not their leader?" Modern politicians employ archaic propaganda methods while business has continuously refined theirs. Political apathy stems from leaders' inability to dramatically present themselves and their platforms. Today's political campaigns are all bombast and glitter, disconnected from the essential work of studying the public scientifically and selling them ideas effectively. Politics, America's first big business, ironically failed to learn from business's sophisticated mass distribution techniques. The waste is staggering. Emily Newell Blair documented a speaking tour costing $15.27 per potential vote changed, an efficiency no business would tolerate. Politicians understand the public, but lack the skills of general sales managers or public relations experts. Political campaigns need careful planning with honest platforms, scientific analysis of public needs, proper budgeting, transparent fundraising, and coordinated emotional appeals targeting specific group interests rather than just party affiliations. Unlike business, which uses multiple emotional appeals, politicians rely too heavily on words alone. Emotional content must align with campaign plans, adapt to different audience groups, and suit the distribution media. Traditional emotional tactics like baby kissing only work when they symbolize actual policy positions. Modern politics overemphasizes personality when party platforms should be primary. Campaign managers must recognize that the public consists of interlocking groups, economic, social, religious, educational, cultural, whose interests must be addressed to overcome political apathy. Effective campaigners must synchronize their message across all media channels, print, radio, exhibitions, contests, educational institutions, rather than relying on speeches alone. The statesman's role isn't merely pleasing the public, but swaying it through dramatization and circumstance creation. A propagandist wouldn't just argue for low tariffs, but would stage simultaneous exhibitions showing tariff costs, enlist prominent supporters, and create dramatic boycotts, all before addressing the public directly. Bernays advocates creating a Secretary of Public Relations in the president's cabinet. Not a mere press agent, but a trained technician who interprets the people to the government and the government to the people. This would enable intelligent leadership that can regiment and guide the masses through education and the dramatization of important issues. Education isn't receiving its rightful public attention, despite adequate material support for schools and widespread interest in college education. The public fails to recognize education's true value as a social force in a democracy. This disconnect stems partly from educators being trained to stimulate classroom thinking, but not to engage the broader public. In a democracy, educators should maintain relationships with the general public that supports them financially and culturally. Normal schools should train teachers for this dual role, as classroom educators and as public propagandists. Teachers, often poorly compensated, feel inferior when measured against successful business people, a comparison constantly made by their own students. This creates a repressed profession that could be elevated through conscious propaganda efforts. State universities face particular challenges as their funding depends on legislative support influenced by public opinion. This can lead presidents to prioritize public service appeals over educational quality. Endowed colleges face different problems, often depending on businessmen whose practical values may conflict with abstract academic pursuits. To address these issues, many colleges have developed news bureaus to manage their public relations. These efforts aim to educate alumni, attract students, maintain school spirit, highlight research, and secure targeted endowments. In the art world, propaganda plays a crucial role in elevating American appreciation. art galleries must deliberately create public acceptance when launching an artist's works. Commercial art offers unprecedented opportunities because mass production reaches its limits when competing solely on price. Businesses increasingly capitalize on aesthetic values to create new competitive advantages. A notable example occurred when Cheney Brothers exhibited silk designs inspired by Edra Brandt, a famous French ironworker, at the Louvre's Decorative Arts section, the first American art materials displayed there. This prestigious association elevated commercial textiles to fine art status, prompting major department stores to feature the collection and shape public taste according to Parisian standards. Social service organizations necessarily employ propaganda because they depend on voluntary support from the wealthy. While traditional attitudes persist through generational inheritance of values, active public opinion can be consciously directed against this inertia. Social campaigns, whether fighting disease, promoting parks, or combating discrimination, fundamentally function as propaganda activities designed to alter public habits, opinions, or behaviors. The mechanics of propaganda utilize every available communication medium, as propaganda is simply establishing reciprocal understanding between an individual and a group. The propagandist must recognize that the relative value of various instruments constantly changes. 50 years before Bernays wrote, public meetings were paramount. By his time, they struggled to attract audiences as automobiles, radio, and newspapers competed for attention. Newspapers remain primary propaganda vehicles, though editorial attitudes have evolved. Modern editors no longer reject stories that might benefit someone. They now use news value as their criterion. Every published item inevitably profits or injures somebody. That's the nature of news. Quality newspapers select news independently, maintaining their obligation to provide accurate, interesting information. Public relations professionals succeed when they create genuine news events that merit attention on their own terms. The source of news should always be clearly stated and facts accurately presented. Magazines differ from newspapers by selecting material deliberately according to continuous policies rather than reflecting current news. Each specializes in particular ideas, health, gardens, fashion, philosophy, becoming propagandist organs for specific concepts. Lectures have transformed from direct influence tools to symbolic events whose importance lies in their repercussion through broadcasts, newspaper reports, and stimulated discussion. Radio emerged as a crucial propagandist tool with uncertain future development. Motion pictures function as powerful unconscious propaganda carriers, standardizing ideas and habits by reflecting and exaggerating popular tendencies rather than stimulating new ones. Personality remains an essential propaganda instrument, as the public instinctively demands individuals who typify corporations or enterprises. As the public becomes more aware of propaganda methods, it will become more receptive to reasonable appeals. Despite growing sophistication, people will always respond to basic appeals for food, amusement, beauty, and leadership. Bernays concludes with a sobering thought. Propaganda will never die out. Intelligent men must realize it is the modern instrument by which they can fight for productive ends and help bring order out of chaos. This statement reveals both the pragmatic utility and the ethical ambiguity at the heart of his work. While propaganda can advance worthy causes, its power to manipulate raises profound questions about autonomy and democracy in a mass society. Throughout his book, Bernays presents propaganda as a neutral tool that can serve either beneficial or harmful ends. He portrays the propagandist as an ethical professional, similar to a doctor or lawyer, who applies specialized knowledge to solve clients' problems. This comparison to established professions attempts to legitimize propaganda as a necessary social function, though it glosses over the crucial difference that doctors and lawyers operate under strict ethical codes and licensing requirements that propaganda practitioners do not share. the fundamental tension between propaganda and democratic ideals emerges as a central paradox. Democracy rests on the premise that citizens can make rational, informed decisions about their governance through open debate and access to accurate information. Yet propaganda, by its nature, seeks to shape public opinion through carefully orchestrated campaigns that often operate below the threshold of conscious awareness. This raises profound questions about autonomy and consent in democratic societies. Bernays attempts to resolve this contradiction by arguing that propaganda brings order to chaos. In his view, modern society is too complex for individuals to navigate without guidance. The propagandist simplifies choices and channels public desires in productive directions, acting as a necessary intermediary between complicated realities and public understanding. However, this benevolent framing obscures the self-interest of those who employ propaganda techniques and their power to define what constitutes productive directions for society. The ethical paradox deepens when examining Bernays' own work. His campaign for the American Tobacco Company to break the taboo against women smoking in public stands as a telling example. By framing cigarettes as torches of freedom during women's suffrage marches, he linked smoking to female emancipation, a connection that served his clients' financial interests while co-opting a legitimate social movement. This campaign demonstrated how propaganda could merge commercial interests with social causes, blurring the lines between authentic social progress and manufactured consent. His work for the United Fruit Company provides an even more troubling illustration. Bernays helped create public support for the CIA-backed overthrow of Guatemalan's democratically elected government in 1954, protecting American corporate interests at the expense of Guatemalan self-determination. He accomplished this through sophisticated media manipulation, including carefully staged press tours and the strategic placement of stories painting Guatemala's government as communist-influenced, despite limited evidence. These examples reveal propaganda's troubling potential to undermine democratic processes while maintaining a veneer of public consent. When public opinion becomes a manufactured product rather than an organic expression of citizen values, the line between democracy and manipulation blurs. The tools Bernays developed have only grown more sophisticated with modern technology and psychological insights. Perhaps the most enduring legacy of Bernays' work is not the specific techniques he pioneered, but the questions he forces us to confront. Who controls the machinery of persuasion in our society? What values and interests do they serve? And can we maintain meaningful democracy in a world where public opinion itself has become a carefully engineered product? These questions become even more pressing in our digital age, where targeted messaging and algorithmic manipulation have amplified the power of propaganda while making it increasingly invisible to its recipients. The tension between propaganda and democracy remains unresolved, suggesting that perhaps Bernays' attempt to portray propaganda as ethically neutral was itself a form of propaganda, designed to legitimize and normalize the systematic manipulation of public opinion.